Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Śrī Bhaktivedanta ki, Grantara Śrīmad Bhagavatam ki, Giridās Maharaj ki, Jai Nitai Gopren Manandi. Okay, so tonight we're going from verses 29 to 43, and we're finishing chapter 19. So we're hearing how Bali Maharaj is surrendering everything to Lord Vamanadeva. And tonight we'll hear how Shukracharya is trying to dissuade or convince Bali Maharaj not to give everything to Vamanadeva. So text 29 to 43. Did you send those other lectures to Chaitanya? He got it. Okay. Understanding Lord Vishnu's purpose. Shukracharya, the best of the learned, immediately spoke as follows to his disciple, who was about to offer everything to Lord Vamanadeva. So, it is said here that he is the best of the learned. So that is the position of the guru, or the spiritual master. The spiritual master is the best of the learned personalities. So what is the guru's qualification to become guru? He must know Krishna. That is his qualification. If he does not know Krishna, then he is not qualified. Kiva Vipra, Kiva Nyasi, and Sudra Keni Nai, Ye Krishna Tattva Veta, Se Guru Hai. So if one knows Krishna Tattva, Krishna Tattva means the science of Krishna consciousness. If one understands the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Bhakti Shastras, then he is qualified to be a spiritual master. Because the guru must lead you to Krishna. That is the guru's purpose. And Krishna, he leads you to your spiritual master. So once we have a guru, then the guru, it is his sole duty to bring one to Krishna. So that is the proper qualification. So it is said here that Shukracharya is the most learned personality. Because that is what the guru's position is. But he's not acting as the most learned personality. He's trying to take Bali Maharaj, the disciple, away from Krishna. So if the guru has some other motive other than to bring the disciple to Krishna, then he must be rejected by the disciple. So therefore we reject all of the bogus gurus. There's so many unqualified gurus in Kali Yuga. So many. So we reject all of them because they're not bringing us or others to Krishna. Therefore, they must be firmly rejected. Whereas the Vaishnava gurus, their only duty is to bring everyone to Krishna. Therefore, they're accepted. So we accept. The guru must be in disciplic succession and he must understand the essence of the disciplic succession, which is to surrender to Krishna. So he must be displaying that qualification himself and his activities. And Haridas Thakur mentions this in the Harinam Chintamani. Before you choose a guru, you have to study him carefully for 1 year. It says this, you must study. Okay, and that's the system in ISKCON. You have to wait at least 6 months and you must study the guru carefully. So the two ways to study the guru is through the achar and the prachar. Achar means how he speaks, prachar means how he behaves. So it is limited how much we can see him behave because we can't be with the guru all the time. We see him for 2 or 3 days, sometimes in a year. So, but you must get as much, when he is here, you must get as much association as possible so that you can ascertain that the guru is qualified. And then you must study the words. Now the words you can study every day, the prachar, means how he preaches. Because we can listen to the guru for hours every day. So this is how we understand if the guru is qualified, by studying the achar, by studying the prachar. When the disciple is convinced Haridas Thakur says after 1 year, or in ISKCON says 6 months, so it means at least 6 months, but to 1 year or longer, then we can accept the guru. And the guru, he must be teaching Kevala Bhakti, or Uttama Bhakti, or Shuddha Bhakti, or pure devotional service. It cannot be mixed devotional service. So we cannot see that the spiritual master, even if he understands the Siddhanta, or the proper conclusion, that we must surrender to Krishna, but if his motivation is to get more disciples, na janam, na janam, na sundarim, so if his motivation is to get profit, distinction, and adoration, in other words, he wants disciples so he can live comfortably, or he wants many followers so he'll be recognized. That kind of motivation, if we detect that in the guru must be rejected. Because that is not the proper qualification. So we have to see that the guru is not simply doing the service because he desires some material benefit. But we see the guru's main motivation in doing the service is to give Krishna to others. So that is the qualification of the guru. He is giving Krishna to other people. Yari Deka, Tari Kaha, Krishna Upadesh. Wherever he goes, whoever he meets, he gives Krishna to them. That is the qualification. So Bali Maharaj, he rejects Sukracharya. Even though it says he is the best of the Brahmins, he's very elevated, but he is demon of the Asuras. And Prabhupada points this out in this section, that in India there's many gurus, but they have a lot of material motivation. So, any points? Class starts a little bit earlier, guys. Come on time. Too late. So, what is it? Only these two, they can come as they like, but the rest of you should come on time. Any points? Shukracharya said, O son of Virochana, this brahmachari in the form of a dwarf is directly the imperishable supreme personality of Godhead Vishnu. Accepting Kashyapa Muni as his father and Aditi as his mother, he has now appeared in order to fulfill the interest of the demigods. You do not know what a dangerous position you have accepted by promising to give him land. I do not think that this promise is good for you. It will bring great harm to the demons. This person falsely appearing as a brahmachari is actually the supreme personality of Godhead, Hari, who has come in this form to take away all your land, wealth, beauty, power, fame, and education. After taking everything from you, he will deliver it to Indra, your enemy. So, would have a bundle for all?
Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura explains in this regard that the very word Hari means one who takes away. If one connects himself with Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord takes away all his miseries. Hence, in the beginning, the Lord also superficially appears to take away all his material possessions, reputation, education and duty, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.8, Yasyadaham Anutrahami Harishyeta Dhanam Sai. The Lord said to Maharaja Yudhishthira, the first instalment of my mercy toward a devotee is that I take away all his possessions, especially his material opulence, his money. This is the special favor of the Lord toward a sincere devotee. If a sincere devotee wants Krishna above everything, but at the same time is attached to material possessions, which hinder his advancement in Krishna consciousness. By tactics, the Lord takes away all his possessions. Here Sukracharya says that this dwarf brahmachari would take away everything. Thus he indicates that the Lord will take away all one's material possessions and also one's mind. If one's delivers his mind to lotus feet of Krishna, Savai Manaka Krishna Padara Vindeho. One can naturally sacrifice everything to satisfy him. Although Bali Maharaj was a devotee, he was attached to material possessions. And therefore the Lord, being very kind to him, showed him special favor by appearing as Lord Vamana to take away all his material possessions and his mind as well.
Any points here?
One should not reluctant at all to give everything to Krishna, because ultimately it belongs to him. And when death comes, we can't take away anything with us. It is best to give. Supreme Personality has come, we must give.
Are you giving everything? Huh? Are you doing it?
I am doing.
Okay.
And good. I have resolved that everything will be given.
Okay, good. Any other points? So Krishna's name is Hari. Hari means lion. Means lion. Hari. So the lion is one who steals or takes away what he wants. The other animals may be there, but when the lion comes, everything is taken. So Krishna is like that. He is Hari. So every day we say Hari Bol. Hari Bol. Chant Hari Hari. Now, if you are chanting Hari Bol, then Krishna will take everything away from you. So you have to make a decision if this is the right movement for you. Because many people, it's not the right place for them. That's why they worship Prabhupada, as in Krishna book. Materialistic people worship Lord Shiva. Because Lord Shiva gives you opulence. They worship Durga, Kali, to get opulence. But Krishna, he takes away. So Prabhupada says that generally the followers of Lord Shiva are rich and the Vaishnavas are poor, because Krishna takes everything away. Right? Now, what is the first thing he takes away? Prabhupada explains in the purport. Too late, Brihad, you should come earlier. Yeah. I know. So, what is the first thing he takes away is miseries. Krishna takes away our klesh. Bhakti has six qualities. Now, what are the first two qualities of bhakti? Klesh Agni and Shubhada. So Klesh Agni means it destroys miseries. So from the very beginning of when we start our practice of Krishna consciousness, our miseries get taken away. Our distress is dissolved. That's why we become devotees. So when you become a devotee, all your material distress is destroyed. And all of us feel like that. When we take the devotional service, we feel relief from the material energy. It is taken away. And as a devotee, we don't really feel distress so much. Not compared to the non-devotees. I mean, of course we have distress in our life because it's the material world, but it's not like the non-devotees. Because Krishna takes that misery, takes that distress away. Because we're under Krishna's protection now. So our lives are not distressful. Prabhupada says there's two problems in life, right? Eating and shelter. So you need somewhere to sleep at night where it's not cold, where you've got some shelter, and you need something to eat. So since you came to ISKCON, were you ever hungry? No? Most of us got indigestion. Yeah. It's the opposite. We don't have problems with being hungry. I've never been hungry since I became a devotee. I had never been hungry before as a devotee either. But, we never get hungry. And we've always got somewhere to sleep. Never have anywhere not to stay. If you can't find anywhere, you just ring someone. I just ring Chaitanya and say, Prabhu, can I come over? And then I ring Brihad or Yogi or, just ring someone and say, can I come over? And say, no problem. Come and stay. So as devotees, we don't have problems, really. So Krishna takes all those miseries away and he gives us protection. He maintains the devotees. Krishna maintains the devotees. We always feel maintained. So then what is the second thing he takes away? The Prabhupada explains in the purport. He takes away superficialities, Prabhupada explains. All the superficial material things, the things you don't really need. They're called anartas in Sanskrit. Anarta means unwanted things. Things in our life that we don't really need anyway. There's so many things in our life that we have, but we don't really need them. But we're attached to them. So Krishna gradually over time, he takes those things as well. the things that you are attached to, like your iPhone or your Birkenstocks or your Rolex or whatever it is. But Krishna gradually, he takes everything away because gradually he wants us to surrender to him. So over time you'll see, and Prabhupada says this, Prabhupada himself read the Bhagavatam, there's a verse in the 11th canto. It says, when Krishna is especially merciful to the devotee, he takes everything away. So in due course of time, as we practice devotional service, things start being taken away. He takes away all the superficial things, all the things that we don't really need, all the attachments we have which stop us from surrendering to him. And gradually over time, Krishna, he takes them one by one by one. Then what else does he take? Prabhupada says, it's a very nice purport, Prabhupada says, by tactics. So Krishna has tactics. You know in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, of cheaters, I am the cheat. So that's who we're dealing with. So by tactics. So you see the way he deals, you know, because we're all devotees, so we all have experience in dealing with him. He does things very mysteriously, very intelligently, very expertly. He's a genius. One of his 64 qualities is genius. Yeah. Well, how does Prabhupada define genius in Nectar of Devotion? Genius means a person who can do one thing, and by that one thing, many things are achieved. And you see the way he acts with us. He does one thing, but then he does another thing simultaneously. He takes away one attachment, he takes away another attachment simultaneously. And sometimes you're just laying on the ground, and you're just thinking, what did he just do? You know, I was materially happy a minute ago, and then suddenly he just takes everything away from you. So he's very expert. So Prabhupada said, by tactics, he takes everything away. He knows just how to do it. And in the Bhagavatam, in the 5th canto, there is a verse that says that Krishna will take everything away from you. No, actually, it says the other way. It says that Krishna will fulfill our material desires, but not in such a way that we will ever want those things again. So he does that. You have a material desire. Sometimes I've experienced this over the years as a devotee, that I have a material desire, and then Krishna, he keeps it away from me. He won't give it to me. And then finally he gives it to you, but he gives it to you in such a way that then you don't want it anymore. Or he gives it to you and then you realize it wasn't that good. Or he gives it to you and it all falls apart. So that's how he works. So he gives you your material desires, but not in a way that you will want them again. Unless you're not very intelligent. Which is what most of us are like. Even when he takes away our material desires, then we still want it again. And we still go after the same thing again and again and again. Even though theoretically we understand it's not good for us, but still we keep desiring those things. So, Prabhupada said that he uses tactics, means he's very expert in how to gradually take away our material desires. And then, Prabhupada says, and then what is the last thing that he steals? The mind. Mamana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Krishna says, always think of me. So that is what he wants ultimately. He wants our mind to be thinking about him. Just like, what do we think about the most? Would you say money? Yeah, so you're probably true. What do you think about the most? I don't think about money the most, but we all have our material attachments, our material desires. So whatever we think about the most, but Krishna wants to be the person that we think about the most, or the thing that we think about the most. Rupa Goswami says, just like the young boy thinks of the young girl, right, all the time. When the young boy or the young girl, when they're attached to each other, they just think about themselves all the time. That's how they think. Remember when you first got married? Right? You always think about your wife all the time, or the wife always thinks about the husband all the time. You remember? Before you got married, remember like that? Like that? And then it changes. What's that?
Even now,
you don't lie very well. If you're going to lie, at least do it with Samak.
Seriously, that's why I'm staying home.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, very good. So, we all have experience of that, that the mind gets locked onto something, whether it's money or the opposite sex or ice cream or whatever it is. You know, all of us get locked onto something. So Krishna, he wants us to think of him all the time. Always think of me, never forget me. That's what Krishna consciousness is all about. So hurry means he will steal our mind. In due course of time, and that's why we study the Bhagavatam. We study the Bhagavatam so that we can eventually always think about Krishna. Because the 10th canto, which hopefully we'll get to in about 18 months' time, that is all about Krishna. Right? So, Leela Maya is here. So, gradually, why did we study the first 9 cantos systematically? Why does Shukadev not go straight to the 10th canto? Right? Because the first 9 cantos are very much about detachment. Because if you don't become detached from the material world, then you can't think of Krishna. So why do we study the Bhagavatam? We study the Bhagavatam to detach us from the material energy, so that one day we can think of Krishna. So Prabhupada says when we finish the end of Canto 9, which is end of next year, he said we should be God-realized, which I'm not. Yeah, but in 18 months' time, I'm not going to be God-realized. But we should be. That's why we study systematically. So when we go through then, we develop detachment from the material world, become attached to Krishna, then you can hear the 10th canto properly. The 10th canto is going to be very different. Right? The mood in the class is going to be very different. Everyone's going to be coming on time like that. Otherwise, I'm not even going to, seriously, I'm not going to let people in. These cantos are different, but 10th canto is going to be very different. Like that. So if you're going to come, you come. If you're coming late, then just stay outside. I'm not going to open the door. So. And if you don't think I'm serious, then just wait. So. The 10th canto is a very serious... We're not qualified to study the 10th canto. But now we're there. We'll be there soon. So we have to study very, very seriously, very systematically. The greatest nectar is in the 10th canto. So it has to be treated with the greatest respect. Like that. So any points?
Prabhupada, you said you are not self-realized. I was just wondering, why did you say that?
Because I like to tell the truth.
But I think you are.
Yeah, because you don't know me very well. So.
Well, self-realized is maybe I don't
understand. Self-realized means you understand the difference between matter and spirit. That's self-realized. Right. Means you're not in Maya. That's self-realized. Prabhupada was self-realized. Right? Prabhupada was self-realized. I'm not self-realized. So. I'm still in Maya. So.
So, it's not that you differentiate between the spirit and matter. It is, if you are in Maya, then you are not self-realized. Does that mean?
No, it means theoretically. I understand theoretically there's a difference between the body and the soul, but I don't realize it yet. Prabhupada realized it. Prabhupada was never affected by the material energy. That's self-realization. But I'm not like that. So.
Just a question. You mentioned earlier on that a guru is a person, a spiritual master who is learning good things with Krishna. And here we see Shukracharya is basically teaching the opposite, basically taking him away. And before the demons actually, when they listen to the spiritual master, they were very successful in the previous successful days, actually beat the demigods. But if they are taking you away from Krishna, how can we call a person guru?
Well, he's not a guru, technically. He's like a cooler guru or a family guru. But he's not a Vaishnava guru. So that's why we would not accept him.
Well, actually, in Daksha Yajna, when there was so much havoc, pain, somebody cursed the Brahmanas that you will, all the Brahmanas, they won't be really Brahmanas, they will fall down.
Yeah, that was one of Shiva's followers.
And what I was thinking is that according to that, I mean, you can't even blame the Supracharya for that, because that was the curse of him. So whatever Prakriti doesn't leave anybody. So how can we blame him?
Because he has a choice, he doesn't have to be like that. No one's subject to a curse. It means, you know, why are some people qualified gurus and some people are not? That's your choice. The curse doesn't bind you to be like that. The curse is just general because, you know, there will always be smarter brahmanas.
He was from the Prabhu dynasty. And the Prabhu
dynasty was cursed. Yeah, cursing. But you can't say he didn't have a choice. Everyone has a choice. No one's forced to. So.
So where do we stand as an Aksha Brahmana initiation?
Means?
I mean, aren't we affected by the Prakriti?
It depends how advanced we become. Like Prabhupada wasn't affected by Prakriti. So. No, it doesn't mean when it says the Brahmanas will be like that,
yeah.
It doesn't mean us. It means the smarter Brahmanas, that's what it means. That curse was for them, that curse is not for devotees.
Okay.
So, it's a good point that if the guru is, you see Daksha, that's a very good example that Mataji is giving, Daksha, a lot of potency, but not a Vaishnava. Right, same as Shukracharya, a lot of potency. These people, after lifetimes, they build up potency. Just like there's one book that one lady, she's a Western lady, she went to India. She stayed in India for a period of time. I think the book's called Holy Cow. I think from memory, I can't remember. So she writes about what it was like when she stayed in India. And she's a Western lady. She went to India, and then one night she was driving the taxi, and it was like dark, and then one sadhu was walking across the road, so the taxi stopped suddenly, and then she said the sadhu is a Shaivite. He looked straight at her, and she said from that day she got sick, and she could not get rid of the sickness, like for 1 month or something it was there, just by him looking at her like that. So these personalities have a lot of potency. For many lifetimes they did austerity. You know, Daksha and Shukracharya, so they're potent, but they're not devotees. So even though they have Shakti, but they don't have, but they have to be rejected because they're not qualified as devotees. Does that kind of answer you? Yeah, so I think so. So if we see someone's not a devotee, then we reject. We say they're not a guru, they're not qualified. It means they're guru, they have some qualification, they have some Shakti, and they get followers and they can give blessings and they can do these things. But they don't. They can't give you Krishna. So then we reject them. Any other points?
Is Hari means lion? Yeah?
Hari.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was the name of the Lord.
Yeah, Krishna's a lion.
Okay.
It says his chest is like a lion.
Okay.
It says his waist is like a lion. It says he walks like a lion. Many of Krishna's qualities are lion-like.
Okay.
The lion is like Krishna.
Okay.
Any other points? Okay. You have promised to give him 3 steps of land in charity, but when you give it, he will occupy the 3 worlds. You are a rascal. You do not know what a great mistake you have made. After giving everything to Lord Vishnu, you will have no means of livelihood. How then shall you live? So, Brihadvan approval.
Bali Maharaj might argue that he had promised only 3 steps of land, but Shukracharya, being a learned Brahmana, immediately understood that this was a plan of Hari, who had falsely appeared there as a Brahmachari. The word madhu was vatishaye, mutha vatishaye, khatkham, reveals that Shukracharya was a brahmana of the priest class. Such priests
priestly brahmanas are mostly interested in receiving remuneration from their disciples. Therefore, when Shukracharya saw that Bali Maharaj had risked all of his possessions, he understood that this would cause havoc not only to the king but also to the family of Shukracharya, who was dependent on Bali Maharaj's mercy. This is the difference between a Vaishnava and a Swartha Brahmana. A Swartha Brahmana is always interested in material profit, whereas a Vaishnava is interested only in satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. From the statement of Shukracharya, it appears that he was in all respects a Swartha Brahmana, interested only in personal gain.
Any points?
From other things which Shukracharya said, the most thing painful to me is when he knew that he is Vishnu, he didn't even pay obeisances to him. You know?
Not very good.
He said that he immediately paid obeisances.
Yeah. And the other point?
Do you have a doubt? As a Swartha Brahmana or Brahmana basically, is that not a quality of a Brahmana to be detached from the material things? Of course, Vaishnavas are there, but from the Brahmana's side, they will also be detached from the material things and would have their life, they would be living on daily basis. What they get for that day is that what would be their life for that day. I'm not able to reconcile here when Prabhupada is saying that Brahmanas are having material desires. It's not.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So that's the whole point which is being made here. So Prabhupada's pointing out in the purport that there are two classes of personalities being spoken here, the Vaishnavas and the Smartha Brahmanas. Smartha Brahmanas means they're into the smriti, they're into the rules, the regulations, they're very pukka. They do everything like that, but the bhakti is not there. So then what is the point? What's the point of doing everything perfectly? And you see, even sometimes devotees in ISKCON, they get right into all the rules and regulations, and everything has to be perfect and everything has to be pukka. And they're always doing everything like that, and they get on everyone else's case, because you're not doing this and you're not doing that. But where is the bhakti? They're missing the point. You can follow all the rules and regulations, you can be very pukka and very strict, but it all must be for Krishna's pleasure. That's the point. Otherwise, Rupa Goswami says, bhakti is destroyed, vinashyati, by niyamagraha. Niyamagraha means, what's happening, Brinda? How come you're so restless tonight? You're normally so peaceful and shanti. Are you going to be peaceful and shanti from now on? Okay, that's good. So, niyamagraha means one who is not attached to the rules and regulations or too attached. So, Rupa Goswami said this destroys the bhakti. You know, sometimes you see it at devotees, and I've done it myself, you know, especially when you're a new devotee, right? You tell all the other devotees in the ashram, when I was a brahmachari, we used to live in the ashram, I used to tell all the other brahmacharis, do this, do that, don't know, you're doing this, you're doing that, and then they'd all tell me like that. Yeah, I remember we used to drive to do Harinam on Friday night, so we're driving down, and everyone would be arguing with each other, you know, all the brahmacharis, you know, you did this, you did that, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, but that's not the point. So niyamagraha, too attached to the rules and the regulations, right? So the Smartha Brahmanas, they like this, too attached to all the rules and the regulations like that. Now, according to the Bhagavatam, because the Vaishnavas are not like that, they follow the rules and regulations. The Vaishnavas are very pukka, and they follow things very nicely, but the main point is to give pleasure to Krishna, which is the ultimate goal. So the Bhagavatam, because the Vaishnavas are following the Bhagavat philosophy, so the Bhagavatam teaches us Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayat Ahuitukam. So bhakti is automatically followed by Vairagya and jnana, which means knowledge and renunciation. So the Vaishnava gurus, the Vaishnava Brahmas, the Vaishnava devotees, they are genuinely renounced. That's how we have to become over time. We have to become renounced. Not like the smarter Brahmanas. You see, in India these days, a lot of the so-called gurus, so-called Brahmanas, it's all about making money. It's just a family business, right? So every time you do a jagya at home, or every time you do something at home, you have to call a Brahmana. The Brahmana comes, he does some jagya, and does some puja, and does some mantra, and then you have to give him money. Right? If you give him money, then he's happy. That's a livelihood. Right? And then he goes home and watches television. Right? And then he gets the next phone call and he comes. So it's not really bhakti. So a devotee, he must be renounced. No? We have to renounce this world. So we have to see in ourselves, because we're all aspiring devotees. We're not Vaishnavas. We're Vaishnava Bas, which means we're practicing devotees. We have to see in our own hearts how much renunciation is actually there. Have we actually become renounced? Because a lot of the time, even in devotional service, we're doing things for material profit. We do things to get remuneration. Because we want something material. Because we want profit, distinction, adoration, these things. And you see that devotees, even in the beginning of their devotional service, there's a lot of material desire there. They're doing devotional service, but it's a lot about what they're getting. Whereas when a devotee becomes more advanced, you'll see they become purified, they become detached. So it's important for devotees to develop and cultivate this spirit of detachment. Even as grihasthas, we should be detached. We shouldn't be too opulent. You know, comfortable. We can live comfortably. That's okay. But not too opulent. So we don't become attached to the material. We should live simply. Prabhupada says, Brahminical life means simplicity. So even as devotees, even as grihasthas, we should live a simple life. And we should become more and more over time, more vairagya should develop. Prabhupada said not even a farthing, means not even 1 cent, should be used in sense gratification. So a grihastha should be like that. He shouldn't just be wasting his money in sense gratification. That's renunciation. Renunciation means you use your money for Krishna's service. You know, some devotees, they say, oh, I haven't got enough money. But that's just because of the way you live. You know, if you live more simply, you'll have plenty of money. Krishna always gives us enough money. Any points?
When you say that they follow rules and regulations, what I want to know, well, if they are following rules and regulations and if they are doing it for the pleasure of Krishna, then what's wrong?
Yeah, that's the point. If they're doing it for Krishna's pleasure, then that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should follow the rules and regulations. We should be paka. We should be strict.
Yeah.
We should follow things nicely.
Yeah.
Just like now it's Chaturmasya. What does Chaturmasya mean? 4 months where we follow some. So what did Prabhupada ask the devotees in ISKCON to do for Chaturmasya? Yeah, but what did he ask? What do we ask to do? In ISKCON, what do we do for Chaturmasya? Right. First month we don't eat spinach. Right. Second month we don't eat yogurt. Third month is
milk,
and the fourth month is uridal. Okay. So what month are we in now? See. So we're fasting from yogurt. Right. So what is lassi?
Is it yogurt?
Yeah, it's yogurt and water. Right. And the devotee's drinking lassi. Right. But yogurt. That's the point. Right. Or even one devotee, I remember a couple of years ago, he made, it was the third month of Chaturmasya, so we fast from milk. So he made a mango milkshake, and then he was drinking it. And the devotee said, why are you drinking that? It's milk. He said, no, it's milkshake, it's mango with milk. So that's not good. So then if you're having dahi wada, you say, well... Yeah, devotees do that. Chaturmasya, they have dahi water. They say it's not yogurt, it's dahi water. Or they have lassi. They say it's not yogurt, it's lassi. What is that? So, Yes, Mataji.
So I got told by a senior devotee just a few days ago that you can still, because I asked what they're using the cakes instead of yogurt, if they can't use yogurt. And she said, no, you can still use yogurt, you just can't have plain yogurt. But you can have yogurt if it's in anything, because it's not technically yogurt anymore.
Yeah, that's true. That's
like
true.
Lassi cakes or whatever.
No, Lassi's going a bit far.
They said Lassi too. And like, even if you mix yogurt with something else, then it's not just yogurt, so you can still have it.
Yeah,
like
I think
the milkshake, the mango milkshake. Right?
Yeah, I mean that's open to interpretation.
Okay.
Because some devotees will say lassi. Personally, I wouldn't drink lassi. Like if they make a cake, and then there's yogurt in the cake, yeah, I'd eat that because it's not really yogurt. I mean, it's like yogurt's in there, but it's like, you know, it's mixed. Or I'll leave the yogurt out, but you know, lassi's, you know, that's yogurt. You know, you put a bit of water in it and you say it's not yogurt anymore, it's lassi, but... What's that? Well, what do you think shrikhand is? Huh? But Janmashtami is when we have the... Oh, we do have shrikhand.
We did.
Yeah, we did so.
No, but shrikhand is okay because it's all the yogurt part has been filtered out.
Yeah.
So... Because it's like milk is different from yogurt, shrikhand is different from yogurt. Processing done already. For 3 days, you hang it up. So shrikhand has yogurt has changed the
shrikhand. Which part of India are you from? Anywhere near Gujarat? So we're breaking Chattamasya. We are, because shrikhand is yogurt. It's not something different from yogurt. It's yogurt.
No, because yogurt has got potency. If you put yogurt into milk, it will convert it into yogurt. But shrikhand, if you put it in milk, it won't do that. It's changed.
So that's what I mean. Everyone's going to do something different anyway. No one does that. I mean, don't always drink lassi. I'll sit there in front of you and drink lassi and I say, it's not yogurt, you know. So the point I'm making is that we should be a little bit pucker. We should be a little bit strict like that. Because it means there has to be some rule and regulation. Like, I won't drink yogurt. I won't have shrikhand generally. I mean, if Janmashtami, we just do whatever. But, you know, technically then, like that. But the point is there should be some strictness. There should be some vairagya or sense control, renunciation. Now, the Vaishnavas have to follow something. You know, we don't do a lot of austerity. So we should at least follow it. But the point is, if Prabhupada asks us to do something, we should do it. Because I know devotees who don't even follow Chattamasya. I know devotees who don't even follow Akadashi. You know, so, you know, if Prabhupada asks us to do something, do it. That's the point.
Did he tell us to do the Apollo Chattamasya?
Prabhupada? He said those four things. That's all he said. Strict Chattamasya is much more.
Yeah.
Much more than that, so... Strict Chattamasya only once a day and so many things.
And then you have to lie down on the floor.
Yeah, so many things. Yeah. Don't shave, so many things.
Yeah.
We don't do all those things, but Prabhupada said, at least do these four things. That's what he said.
Okay.
Any points?
Well,
see, I wouldn't have lassi. Yeah. I think that's taking it too far. Like that. I mean, but like I said, everyone's going to say something different anyway. So, you know, it's up to you what you want to. Or the best thing is just ask your guru. Just ask them what they do. That's what I do. Like my spiritual master said, don't eat uttapan. Because uttapan is made of herd dal. I didn't know that. So I was eating uttapan during the fourth, the Kartik mass. So I told him, I said, oh, I love the uttapan in Jagannath Puri. And he just looked at me and said, you can't eat uttapan. And then, you know, so from that time, now that I know, I don't eat uttapan. Because it's Urdal, Papadam, Uttapan, these things like that. It's an austerity for me. Because I really like the Uttapans in Jagannath Puri, but I can't take them. Because if I did that, after my guru directly told me, you know, how would I feel? Like that. So that's the reason we do these things. If Prabhupada says do it, then do it. You know. And Prabhupada didn't ask us to do very much, so. Okay. Any other points?
But in India, the sag is grown more in that month.
Yeah.
That's why there is a restriction. But if we are living away from India,
Yeah, so the first month is Sak.
Because it grows.
Sak means green leafy vegetable. It means spinach. So then devotees, they have what do you call it, silver beet, and they say that's not spinach. So it's like, you know. So anything which is green and leafy, then you should not eat it. That's the point. You know, spinach or silver beet or kale or all these different things you should not eat.
Well, it's actually said during those periods in India especially, the green leaves, they actually get a lot of insects. And then, things like that, so that's
one of the reasons. Yeah. Anyway, so we shouldn't eat it, that's the point. It says suck, then don't eat suck. Anything that's green and leafy, don't eat it. That time. Okay. Which one are we on? 34? Okay. Vamana Dev will first occupy the three worlds with one step. Then he will take his second step and occupy everything in outer space. Then he will expand his universal body to occupy everything. Where will you offer him the third step? So we see in the next chapter, Bali Maharaj says, put the third step on my head. So Krishna is looking for this kind of reciprocation from the devotee. Shukracharya cannot understand this point. He thinks that if I give everything to Vamana, we're going to lose. Shukracharya is only worried about himself because Bali Maharaj gives him charity. He's a Brahmana, but he gives him a lot of charity. He's very wealthy. Shukracharya is very wealthy. So he's worried that he's going to lose his income stream. So he's saying, don't give to Vamana, don't give to God, because then we will lose. But Bali Maharaj is thinking exactly the opposite way. He's thinking, I will give to God, and I will be fully maintained. So a devotee has a different type of faith. The materialist thinks, I have to look after myself. Right, and devotee thinks Krishna will look after me. Because we know Krishna will look after us. He always does.
How come Sukracharya is able to actually foresee what Lord can do? I mean, Lord hasn't done anything yet. I mean, in this loka he has specifically mentioned this is what he's going to do. This is two-step. What is he going to come? How is he able to?
Because Prabhupada explains that many of the sages are trikalagya. So they have some ability. They can see the future like that. So somehow he can tell what's about to take place. And
You will certainly be unable to fulfill your promise, and I think that because of this inability, your eternal residence will be in hell. Learned scholars do not praise that charity which endangers one's own livelihood. Charity, sacrifice, austerity, and fruitive activities are possible for one who is competent to earn his livelihood properly. They are not possible for one who cannot maintain himself. So there's an important point, that devotees should be sensible. They should be responsible. Because basically what it's saying here, if you give everything away in charity, then you've got nothing else to give. Right? Then you can't maintain yourself, you can't maintain your family, and you can't give any more charity to others. So even though you say, well, I gave everything, it's not very responsible. It's not very intelligent. So the Bhagavatam is saying we should be very responsible, we should be intelligent, and the way we give charity should be balanced. You know? Just like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had one disciple, and the disciple used to give everything to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Right? So that's good, that he gave everything to his guru. I mean, literally means everything. Every week when he got money, he'd give it all to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But then his wife had to come to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and get some money back so she could feed the kids. So the disciple should be intelligent enough to understand that from the beginning. Right? I'll give this portion to Krishna, to the temple, to the guru, but this portion I'll keep for the family. So we shouldn't be sentimental.
We should make sure we maintain everything properly. So if you need advice, then speak to the senior devotees, you know, spiritual masters, and they can advise you properly. Therefore, one who is in full knowledge should divide his accumulated wealth in five parts: for religion, for reputation, for opulence, for sense gratification, and for the maintenance of his family members. Such a person is happy in this world and in the next. So the same point is being made, that we should give to Krishna. That is our goal. But Rupa Goswami had a formula, right? And the formula was 50% to Krishna. Prabhupada says 25% for maintenance of the family, like that, and then 25% for emergency. So we can't follow that in this age anyway. You know, if you gave 50% of what you earned to the temple, you couldn't pay your rent, you couldn't live practically, most devotees. So the point is that every devotee should give something to Krishna. Part of our weekly income should go to Krishna. How much of that? That's up to you. But something should go. Whether it's 10% or 20% or 50%, that's up to you. But everything, every week, something should be going to Krishna. That's the point. One might argue that since you have already promised, how can you refuse? O best of the demons, just take from me the evidence of the Bhavriccha Shruti, which says that a promise is truthful preceded by the word Om, and untruthful if not. So now he's, you know, this is what people do. You know, I was saying the other day, you know, every time I get on a train in India, then the guy across from me starts preaching to me. He says, "Ah, Krishna says," and he starts saying this. But then I say to him, "Where does Krishna say that?" So this is what people do. To justify their own philosophy, they will quote the Shastra. And people in India do this all the time. So, Krishna said this, and the Bhagavatam says this, and this, and that. And they will justify what they want. So, Shukracharya is saying to Bali Maharaj, you didn't say Om before you spoke to Vamanadeva, so you don't have to give this to him. Because when you say Om, then it is absolute. So this is, it's nonsense actually. You know, the Lord himself is there and he's trying to play games with the Lord. And you see what happens to him in the next couple of chapters. And he loses an eye. You don't play with Krishna. Seriously, you don't play with Krishna. Don't play these jokes. You know, you try to steal from Krishna and then you watch what happens. You get a big hit on the head. Bang. So you don't play games with Krishna.
Maybe conversant with the story of King Harishchandra. King Harishchandra gave the charity in rain. And those people came in the morning and took up everything. And he had even sent his wife and child to give the dakshina. So he was more truthful and he's talking about word om.
Yeah, just be very careful. The Vedas enjoin that the factual result of the tree of the body is the good fruits and flowers derived from it. But if the bodily tree does not exist, there is no possibility of factual fruits and flowers. Even if the body is based on untruth, there cannot be factual fruits and flowers without the hope, without the help of the bodily tree. Okay, so we'll read this. Chaitanya Prabhu.
The Sloka explains that in relation to the material body, even perfection truth cannot exist without a touch of untruth. The Mayavadis say, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. The spirit soul is truth and the external energy is untruth. The Vaishnava philosophers, however, do not agree with the Mayavad philosophy. Even if for the sake of argument, the material world is accepted as untruth, the living entity entangled in the illusory energy cannot come out of it without the help of the body. Without the help of the body, one cannot follow the system of religion, nor can one speculate on philosophical perfection. Therefore, the flower and fruit, pushpa-phalam, have to be obtained as a result of the body. Without the help of the body, that fruit cannot be gained. The Vaishnava philosophy therefore recommends Yukta Vairagya. It is not that all attention should therefore be diverted for the maintenance of the body, but at the same time, one's bodily maintenance should not be neglected. As long as the body exists, one can thoroughly study the Vedic instructions, and thus at the end of life, one can achieve perfection. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 8.6. Yam yam vati smaran bhavam yathyatri antya kalevara. Everything is examined at the time of death. Therefore, although the body is temporary, not eternal, one can take from it the best service and make one's life perfect.
So Rupa Goswami, as we are known as Rupa Nuga Vaishnavas, which means we are followers of Rupa Goswami. So Rupa Goswami teaches us Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yukta Vairagya Uchite. That we have to follow the principle of Yukta Vairagya. Yukta Vairagya means you have to look after your body. Right? It's the duty of every devotee to look after their health. Prabhupada said to Dhananjaya Prabhu, one of his disciples, he said, health first, then Krishna consciousness. Because if you don't have good health, it's very difficult. We all know, when we neglect our health, very difficult to practice Krishna consciousness. You know? So Prabhupada would always sign his letters at the end, hope this meets you in good health. So you have to look after your health, mental health, physical health, emotional health, all these things. Everything has to be looked after nicely. And I actually heard my guru, I was listening to a lecture last week, my spiritual master said, so many devotees are chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, but because they're not properly situated according to Varna and Ashram, they're not getting the full benefit of the chanting. So in other words, you have to look after your body, your body's needs, your mind's needs, your emotional needs, your intellectual needs. All these things have to be properly looked after. And then you can practice Krishna consciousness nicely. So you have to be in the right ashram, so your emotions are taken care of, right? You have to be enough sense gratification. You have to have nice prasadam to eat, otherwise the mind gets disturbed. We all know what it's like. Sometimes, you know, we don't eat nice prasadam and the mind's not satisfied, not peaceful, like that. Even the sannyasis, they need nice prasadam. I've heard some of the sannyasis say, you know, because sannyasis are performing tapasya. So it doesn't mean opulent, but they need to eat nice prasadam so they feel satisfied, so the mind is peaceful. And the body has to be looked after. Most devotees start looking after their body after they start having some problems. You know, when the body starts falling apart, then they get serious. We should be proactive. So we should do exercise every day. Make sure the body is in good shape so that we can serve Krishna nicely. It's hard to practice Krishna consciousness. We all know when you're not feeling well. So Yukta Vairagya means using everything in Krishna's service. And the body belongs to Krishna. So it must be looked after. So we can use it in his service properly. So, any points? Okay. When a tree is uprooted, it immediately falls down and begins to dry up. Similarly, if one doesn't take care of the body, which is supposed to be the untruth, in other words, if the untruth is uprooted, the body undoubtedly becomes dry. So Prabhupada points this out in the purport once again, that the body is spiritual, because the devotee is using his body in Krishna's service. So the more we use our body in Krishna's service, the more spiritual it becomes. So it should not be neglected because it is Krishna's property. It is the Guru's property. So that's how we see our body. Yeah? Prabhupada said, sickness and sleep are maya. Right? So if we're getting sick, we should see this is maya. This is maya trying to stop us doing our service. So we should take it seriously. And same as sleep. If we're sleeping too much, that's stopping us doing our service. So we have to sleep. Prabhupada said, sleep enough, but not too much. Then you're wasting time when you could be serving Krishna. Prabhupada used to sleep 2 hours in the night. Then during the day, half an hour like that. So 3 hours to 4 hours a day, Prabhupada would rest. You know. So then, Prabhupada would say to reporters, people would speak to Prabhupada, and his disciples say, Prabhupada only sleeps 2 hours a night. And Prabhupada said, yes, I think sleep is a waste of time. It is like death. So a devotee feels like that. Don't sleep too little. Don't sleep too much. But also, take care of your health. Don't get sick. Especially I see young devotees. You know, devotees are in their 20s and then they've got all these health problems. How are you going to serve Krishna? It's not good. You have to look after your health so you can serve Krishna for the rest of your life. With energy, with vigor. You see Prabhupada. You've seen videos of Prabhupada going on the morning walk. You know, Prabhupada's in his 70s. And he's walking like that. He's looking after himself. That's the point. So we should look after ourselves. The utterance of the word Om signifies separation from one's monetary assets. In other words, by uttering this word, one will become free from the attachment to money because his money is taken away from him. To be without money is not very satisfactory, for in that position one cannot fulfill one's desires. In other words, by using the word Om, one becomes poverty-stricken. Especially when one gives charity to a poor man or beggar, one remains unfulfilled in self-realization and in sense gratification. So Prabhupada says that you should not give all your money to poor people. I mean, give something to them, but don't give everything. Someone comes to you and says, I want charity. You don't give everything. You just give something. But then Prabhupada points out the best thing we can give them is prasad. Just like if you go to India, there's always beggars. When you pull up the car in the traffic, right, someone knocks on the window all the time. So Radhanath Swami, whenever someone knocks on the window, he always has prasadam. Right, he winds down the window and he gives them prasad. Because that's the best thing that you can give. That's the best charity. So we should always give prasad. That's the highest charity. Feed people. But give them prasad. Therefore, the safe course is to say no. Although it is a falsehood, it protects one completely. It draws the compassion of others towards oneself, and it gives one full facility to collect money from others for oneself. Nonetheless, if one always pleads that he has nothing, he is condemned, for he is a dead body. While living or while still breathing, he should be killed. So the Vedic injunction is we should not live off others. It's not healthy. You know, all these people on the dole, you know, people on the dole, on the government allowance. Prabhupada did not like that for devotees in ISKCON. He didn't like devotees being on the dole. Because he said they'll become lazy. And that's what happens. Is there all the people on the dole, they become lazy. Prabhupada said we should make an honest living like that. So we shouldn't live off the charity of others. You know, unless you're very advanced, like a brahmana, like a sannyasi, you can live off charity, but that's no problem. But then you have to live very simply. But we should not live off other people's expenses. We should work, maintain ourselves. Okay, one more verse. This verse is very interesting. Final verse. That's all. In flattering a woman, these are the only times you're allowed to lie. Right? Because it says in the last verse, Sugadeva Goswami says, Shukracharya says, just lie. Don't tell the truth. Right? Now he's saying this in Shastra, because now he's quoting, this is the Bhagavatam, there are certain times when you are allowed to lie. I was relieved when I read this. Because we're allowed to lie, but only under these circuits. This is the short. So anything outside of this, it's not bona fide. Okay, so are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. In flattering a woman to bring her under control. And so if you want to get your wife to do something, you say some lies. Right? You say, you look very beautiful today. Yeah, you say a few things and then you ask her, so can you do this for me? That's okay. Not that so. In joking. Okay. And this really, I was relieved. Because everyone knows me, anyone who knows me, I joke all the time and I'm always saying stupid things. So the Bhagavatam says it's okay. So. Okay. In a marriage ceremony. What does this mean? Can anyone explain this?
Taking vows.
So, I will stay with you for the rest of my life. Actually, I was just joking. So it doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that. Because I had to look this up. Because I couldn't understand this one. Yeah, you go to a marriage and then all the marriages are just lies. So it doesn't make sense. So it says when there's a speech after the marriage and everyone's glorifying the groom, right? You can tell some lies. You say, oh, he's a really far-out guy and he does all this stuff. And like, you can like make it sound really good. Because it's his marriage day. So you can make it sound like, you know, maybe you can bend the truth a little bit or, you know, like that. So on a marriage ceremony, you can speak something which is a little bit, you know.
Upbeat.
Upbeat, yeah.
There's a saying in Tamil as well on this project. There's a saying in Tamil that Ayiram Poi Solle Allu Oru Kalyanam. You can say at least 1,000 lies to get that marriage done.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you uplift the bride or bride.
That's what it means. Yeah, that's what it means, yeah. Yeah, it means, So if you're trying to get your son or your daughter married, then you go there and you say, oh yeah, they're like this, they're like this, they're like this, they're like this. So, not lies, but just inflating the whole situation. So.
And also in the astrological compatibility also they compare to that. They see that minimum or matching and the rest they see and they say, no, actually 80% or 90%, but it's actually 60% or
yeah, just so you can get them married. Like that. In earning one's livelihood. So Prabhupada says this in the 18th chapter of the Gita. He says when you're doing Vaishya activity, there's always going to be lies. You know, when someone sells you something, right, you never tell them all the truth. No. You say, I'll give this to you for cost price. Right, but it's not cost price. Right, so it's always in business, there's always lies. It's just part of business. When one's life is in danger, so if your life's in danger, you can lie to save yourself. In protecting cows and brahmanas, in protecting a person from an enemy's hand. So if you could protect someone, if someone's going to kill someone, and they're saying, where is the person? They must be here somewhere. You say, no, I haven't seen them. Because they're hiding over there. So protect them, you can lie. There's no sin. So only under those circumstances. Otherwise, tell the truth. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Yeah.
Jai.